Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello. Welcome to Blummel Off the Rails. We'll be hanging out for the next hour or so, maybe. We'll see. 813-90-BUBBA if you'd like to call in. Oh, this chair is coming apart.
Again?
It's at the bottom. It's like...
Oh, underneath it?
Yeah, like the cover. There's just tape everywhere. I don't know what's going on. I thought I was sitting on a jacket, but it's just
yesterday,
the leather on the chair is coming off.
No, I stayed here late yesterday, and one of the things I did was I took all the, like, 700 pieces of tape that he had on the chair and put that, like, leather cover thing on.
Oh.
But, like, underneath it's kind of weird.
Oh.
And I just put it on just the end to see how it worked.
Oh, okay. I see what's going on here. No, it's good. I just didn't know what it was. It was...
Because the tape he had was all coming apart as well, so.
Donkey teeth, $4.99. We got some stuff to cover. It's been a fast week, but also a very long week. Like, my whole concept of time is totally off.
So it's weird. Like,
I feel like it's the longest week ever, but also, like, Tuesday just happened. So I don't know. 813-90-BUBBA. A lot of things to kind of backfill just because we've been dealing with so much personal stuff on the show that I do want to discuss some of the things that are kind of going on in the ether, in the world. It looks like there was a shooting in Miami Gardens, maybe. I didn't know if this was breaking. I just saw it on Newsmax, and I think this happened last night. Just to kind of fill people in, at least 10 people have been shot outside a Florida restaurant during a music video shoot. I keep seeing French Montana's face show up, so I'm assuming that they're saying it was a music video.
Wasn't, like, probably country or something then?
No, I think it was a rap music video.
Oh.
They were shooting a rap music video. And I don't know if, like, I mean, not to say that, you know, rappers... typically glorify, you know, gang culture, but it would be odd if it's like, no, you're not supposed to actually shoot it. So I don't know what's going on, but it seems like there was a music video being shot for French Montana. 10 people were shot, and I don't really know anything else. I don't know if they're okay. I don't know if they're all dead. So if anybody has any additional information, feel free to call in.
10 injured. All the stories say injured. It doesn't say any dead. It says 10 were injured.
Yeah, I mean, okay, great. That's good. Sporadic gunshots. We thought it was at least 12 shots. I took off running. Okay, so this is just one of the rappers, I guess, who was on site. But glad no one is dead. That's crazy if you fire at all those shots and you get nobody. Not saying that I'm happy everyone's okay. I'm just wondering, you know, I guess you're just haphazardly shooting people. You're not necessarily gonna get an L on that one.
Yeah, they were all just licked. Looks like.
I don't know. I don't know what
that's
that means.
The club they were at. The licking.
Oh, okay, okay. 813-90-BUBBA. If you would like to call in. Last night was very chilled for me. Just went home, hung out, and I was lucky enough to catch a 2-hour conversation with one of my best friends who currently lives in Australia. We have like a crazy time difference. There's a 16-hour time difference. And as annoying as that was when I was in California, it was even more complicated with a 19-hour time difference, which you'd think would be easier because it'd be like closer to the same time.
Right.
But it ended up just being worse. So I you know, because right before I left for California, I'm like, listen, I'm going to have all this free time in Cali. Like, hit me up. We'll chat. And then I really didn't have that much free time. It was kind of a lot of moving. I certainly had a lot. Not a lot, but something to do every day in terms of someone to see or something to do or whatever it is. I even ended up doing an open mat class. I don't know if I mentioned that. My mom works with these people who own a dance studio, but they also happen to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And the woman of the couple casually mentioned to my mom, like, hey, I know your daughter does it. If she would like to attend an open mat for $0 and 0 cents, like, she is more than welcome to come by Christmas Eve and kind of roll around. Now, again, I had been out the game for like 2.5 months, and now I'm about to go roll with a bunch of people I've never met. I don't know if it's going to be white belts or black belts or whatever. I know it's one of those, like, everyone's welcome, but also it's terrifying, because what's different about jiu-jitsu is it's like a really intimate sport. So it is sometimes odd when you're like, hey, how are you? Like, what's your name? Hi. And then it's just like you're almost, you know, your head will be in their crotch. You're mouth to mouth sometimes, very close. So it's a very...
While you're trying to hurt... I mean, not actually hurt them, but you're trying to hurt them.
Yeah. And it's, again, not that it's like a sexual thing at all, but it's just an intimate thing, I would say. You know, I mean, even when I was in class on Wednesday, and it's funny because because there's context around the sport, like, no one's like, hey, you're being gay. Like, everyone understands that.
Yeah, that's what you do.
If you have your legs wrapped around another man or you got him from behind, like, you're trying to kill him. Like, it's cool. It's contact and it's combat. So there's no, like, you know, no one is calling you out for, you know, maybe liking men or something, even though there are some openly gay guys at the gym that I attend, and they're very openly gay about their gayness, and literally no one cares. So that's cool. But even on Wednesday, even though I have, like, been desensitized to the intimateness of the sport, we were being shown a move on Wednesday, and the instructor literally took the guy he was doing a demo with and just head just down. He's like, yeah, okay, get in position. And he just took his hands and just shoved it between his legs and then closed his legs. And so I imagine the guy's forehead was resting nicely on the other guy's testicles. And it was also just like, okay, let's get in position. And he just, like, forcefully almost did this motion. And even me, who's, like, used to seeing guys on guys and girls on girls, like, no big deal, was like, whoa, damn.
Right.
And, you know, and it's funny that, like, nobody flinched. Nobody was like, that's erotic. It's like, because then the next move was, you know, him ripping his arm off. So it was, then it became cool. Now it's not gay anymore because he's hurting him. So whatever. But that's kind of like how it is. But yeah, so going to California and rolling with these people, they couldn't have been nicer. Like, such a nice group of people. But I felt like I had lost a lot of what I had learned, like, a lot of things that I would do. Like, I forgot a lot of moves. I would even, like, some go-tos. I was also terrified that I was going to re-injure myself. So, but I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad that I did it. I think it's important to just in general, forget about jiu-jitsu, but I think it's important to, at least to me, to challenge yourself, like, on a daily basis or somewhat regular basis. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, again, doing jiu-jitsu or something, but, like, get yourself to be uncomfortable and get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the reason that I say that is mostly now I realize how important it is to... I've been listening to a lot of Andrew Huberman. For those that don't know, he's a neuroscientist out of Stanford. He has the Huberman Lab, I think, is his podcast. But he talks a lot about a lot of different things when it comes to just general health and hormones and sleep, wake cycles and diet and exercise, and also just general, like, brain health, I would say. But what I think is probably the most interesting thing that he talks about is dopamine and how to replenish your the dopamine in your brain, which he says, quote, is a it's a replenishable but limited source. So you can replenish your dopamine all you want, but there's going to be a limitation to how much you can actually have in your brain at any given time. So him and other people that I've listened to who are also pretty well-versed and experts in the field, they're like, if you want to feel like pleasure in your life, like you want to get that dopamine hit, you have to do hard things to kind of reset it, to go mm-hmm. like do things that are, quote, on the pain side. And again, that doesn't mean like cutting your wrist or something, but doing something challenging that your body associates with like pain or work. If you can do that often, then you can experience like more bumps in dopamine that make you feel good.
Now, does that come from like back in the day of like having to run away from animals and things like that? Like,
like what the function would be of like why you can't just, I'm not quite sure why the dopamine isn't like you don't feel happy all the time. Cause here's the thing, I guess I would say is that humans aren't designed to be happy all the time. Like that's not the goal. Like when people are like, well, what's your purpose in life? Or, you know, what's your goal? It's like, I just want to be happy. And if I'm not happy, then something's wrong with me. It's like, okay, but that's not how your brain is designed.
Right.
So your brain isn't designed to just be happy all the time. And if something's wrong, your brain is broken. Quite the opposite. If you're happy all the time, much like if you're depressed all the time, something's wrong with you. And you should be experiencing both, because I feel like happiness and sadness, at least those two emotions, are binary opposites. So you don't really know what it's like to be really happy unless you've been really sad
mm-hmm.
and you've experienced hard times. So the way that the brain works is like you can get those big hits of dopamine, but in order to get that big hit, you kind of have to take it on the other side of that pendulum swing. So in order to do that, you have to do things that are challenging, hard, and difficult, and maybe even things you don't necessarily want to do, so that when you accomplish them, like after you accomplish a run and they, you know, they call it, you know, the runner's high, obviously, mm-hmm. I've felt that many times in my life. It has something to do with the endorphins, but I feel like a lot of it when you've completed it is A, you feel good because you did something hard and you're like proud of yourself. You're like, okay, accomplished that and I didn't want to. B is the endorphins. And C is just the fact that you're fucking done. Like you're not in pain anymore. I felt that way when I was doing the hot yoga, the Bikram yoga. I did that for about almost a year because I injured my Achilles tendon. And I saw a friend who was in med school at the time because I didn't have health insurance. So I'm like, you'll do. And he took a look at my leg and he was like, so if you keep doing what you're doing, it's going to rupture and you're going to need surgery. So I suggest you really take some time off of running or, you know, doing anything that's involving stretching the Achilles. So I did fucking yoga for 10 months and I didn't really like it. I convinced myself I did because it was really my only option.
Right.
I even tried swimming and I hate water, but even the flippy floppy of my feet, like that was hurting my Achilles. Hmm. Even though there was no, you know, impact on the joints or anything, it was just this movement of my foot that was fucking me up. So I could really only do yoga, and even certain positions there I had to like modify because I couldn't fully straighten my Achilles. So I was like, man, it really does feel amazing like when you do it. And I thought I was getting this big endorphin high until I realized like I think it's just because I'm out of that hot fucking room. I'm just like out of the torture chamber and I feel good.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a combination of things, but nevertheless, who cares how it happens? If you kind of somewhat torture yourself a little bit and do hard things, on the other end is a big dopamine hit. And now that I know that, I'm doing things a lot more consciously when I work out or if I do, because like lately I've been doing these like biathlon things where you go on a, you know, not a long bike ride, but bike to a place mm-hmm. and then go for a 6 mile run and then bike back. It takes me about 2 hours to complete. But after that's done, I'm like, fuck yeah. Like I am able to endure. I feel good. I feel like I did something challenging. And then also, you know, when I go and watch TV or do something relaxing, I don't feel guilty for it. I feel like I earned it. I just feel good all around. So I think that that is really important in trying to hijack your, because I love all these like brain hacks. I think it's important to try to like hijack your biology and so that you can have it work for you instead of against you.
Sure.
Sort of a deal. And I've said this before, but when it comes to people that don't have to work hard, and this is like another reason like why I wouldn't want to win the lottery, is because like everything becomes mundane. Like, even if you have a mansion or you get that new Ferrari, like at the end of the, after a few weeks, it's just your car. It's just your house. Like you, the hype behind it goes away. Everything fades, and it fades like really quick. That's the fucked up part.
Yeah.
Is like, even the, like, I love being on the air for sure. But I mean, the zhuzh and like the excitement of like your first couple weeks of now being on the air live talking to an audience, like that excitement of like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. Like that fades really, really quickly. I don't know if it faded as quickly for you as it did for me, but then it becomes your job and it's a job you love. But that kind of initial like spike in dopamine and adrenaline and everything like that, it fades. And it's kind of good that it fades because you feel kind of out of control. You know, even with like falling in love or whatever, you know, that initial phase where you like can't get enough of each other, and even that kind of fades to okay, like mm-hmm. this is your I love you or we're in a relationship and this is great, but it's not like that I can't believe I'm gonna see it. Like you can't sleep, can't eat sort of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything like that fades, so it's like, all right. And when people ask like, how do you keep it fresh with your partner, or how do you keep it exciting, you know, with having a routine, or how do you try to get a dopamine hit when you're constantly inundating yourself with things that, you know, score highly on the pleasure side of things. And so what people I think don't understand is that you have to experience the pain or the challenge or something difficult to then be able to experience the pleasures again. Because, like, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, many people listening, where, like, you're on Instagram or Facebook or wherever, and you're scrolling, and at first when you start scrolling, it's, like, exciting because you're like, oh, all these new posts. And then, like, it doesn't even feel good anymore, but you, like, keep doing it. You're like, this isn't fun. Like, what am I doing? It's like, yeah, put the fucking phone down. Go do something. Go for a run. Then if you pick up the phone again and go back on Instagram, then it's fun again. And that's because you've depleted the dopamine in your brain. And so you need to go do something hard to kind of, you know, offset it, bring it back down, and then you're able to kind of get that big bump. So my thing is that's why I wouldn't want to raise my kids if I had them rich, or I don't think that I would not be
giving them everything. And,
yeah, and yeah. I'm not envious of celebrities' kids. I think that they, you know, especially if they're just spoiled, like I imagine most Hollywood stars' kids are, and they weren't the ones to earn the money. You mm-hmm. know, like, say you're not Brad Pitt, but you're Brad Pitt's son or something like that. You didn't have to earn it. Because if you earn it, then you're like, fuck, I worked for it. I earned it. You do movies occasionally. Like, at least you're somewhat gainfully employed and you're self-made.
You appreciate it.
Right. But if you're just born into wealth, and you're just given everything, and your first car is a Mercedes Benz or whatever, G-Wagon, like what is there to look forward to? Like nothing. And mm-hmm. that's why I'm so against like winning the lotto and never working again. Like I want the stakes of life to be real, otherwise it's not fun. Mm-hmm. And I know I've mentioned this before, but if anyone has seen Westworld beginning in season two, the rules of the game change. So initially, the robots can't kill the guests, which are real human beings, in this game called Westworld. So people go, they shoot people, they can rape whoever, and then they wipe clean the memory of the robots, and then the next day they're all back on set doing the same script. But season two, the rules of the game change where the guests can actually, or sorry, the robots can really kill the guests or the humans. So, you know, there's like some line and I forget what it is, but the guy who's been going there for 50 years was like, it wasn't fun anymore because the stakes weren't There were no stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Now the stakes are real. Now it's fun. You know, now it's exciting because now I have to fight for my life. So then everyone gets trapped and the robots are killing humans and it's like this whole fucking ordeal. But I kind of get that. Like, it's not really fun if you know that the game is rigged. If you know you can't fail, like, it's not exciting. I mean, that's the whole, isn't that the whole allure of, like, doing adrenaline junkie type stuff is that the risk is real?
Yeah.
You're not playing a video game. You're really in the driver's seat, or you're really cliff diving
and
jumping.
And the same with people that watch it. Like, they do the, you know, the Willendas do the high wire act between mountains or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, man, that's amazing. And then you go to watch it and they're like, they have a safety tether on. Who cares?
Right.
You know, the risk is why people watch it. And it's why, you know, and
why
even
watch football.
Even Nick Lewinda said, hey, I would rather do it without the safety thing, but they made me, whether that's true or not, who knows? But like, he's like, you know,
who's that, by the way?
The guy that actually did the walk.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's when the risk is real, that's when it becomes exciting. That's mm-hmm. when you get the adrenaline and the dopamine hits and you feel alive and exhilarated. But if you take that away, and I feel like that's what people don't like realize when they come into winning the lottery. It's like, yeah, you're going to get a fucking massive dopamine hit when you win. But then what? Everything else. I mean, I get a lot of times people win the lottery and they go broke and whatever. But imagine that that's not the case. That say you win the lottery and you're set for life. Like, you're fucked. Like, nothing's cool anymore. You can afford everything. You know, you live in luxury. You never have to challenge yourself again. It's like you start to go numb. And that's why I think, in my estimation, why we see so many children of rich parents, especially like really rich parents, they end up doing drugs like homeless people. Like mm-hmm. they end up doing heroin or fentanyl or coke or something because they want to just fucking feel something.
Mm-hmm.
They feel nothing. Like, there's no, like, I worked hard and I accomplished this. It's like, why even go to school? Like, why go to college if you're set for life? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, so they end up doing these things where they just want to feel something and they end up being total fucking losers. And not only do I see this with, like, celebrity kids, but I also saw it with, like, when I went to Australia and I met a lot of wealthy, affluent Jewish families where, you know, my parents' generation were very successful and the kids didn't have to do shit. Like, my generation was fucking lazy. A lot of them lived at home. They had no intention of moving out. They were just basically, like, kind of stagnant adolescents, even though they were in their mid-20s. So I was like shocked to see a lot of especially the boys. I'm like, why do you live at home? What are you doing? They're like, why would we leave? Like, everybody lives at home here. And I'm my God.
That became like the norm for millennials.
Yes. Yes, it did. And it was even worse there, I feel like, just because it was like part of the culture almost, especially with not, and again, I don't know if it's necessarily an American thing, but even within America, I've come to see that a lot of people who are not, say, Anglican and white, seems to be the case that a lot of more ethnic, and I say that not saying that whites aren't an ethnicity, but you understand what I'm trying mm-hmm. to say. There's kind of they normalize and maybe even pressure you to stay in the home until, like, you get married or something.
Yeah.
Like, they want, you know, it's not uncommon to see a Persian family where there's three generations living in one house, or mm-hmm. an Indian family, or an Asian family where it's very multi-generational. And it's not because necessarily anybody is poor. It's just like, why would we waste money? We can all collectively pool our money and live here. Or this place is already paid off because parents have lived here for 30 years. Just stay here. And also, we want you. The family's very involved in everything that the children and grandchildren do. So mm-hmm. not uncommon, even among my friends back in California, people that I know that aren't, you know, white. So, yes. So back to the dopamine. Go torture yourself for a little bit. And it is unpleasant, but it also just gives you confidence that you are somewhat resilient, that you can do something, that you'll be fine. I've often noticed myself when I was doing the, because I'm not really used to working out for long, long periods of time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck, let's do something new. Let's do something where it's like, I got 2 hours and it's not really any breaks. Like it's, we're biking, we're running, and then we're biking again, and we're not fucking taking breaks. We're just getting it done. I kind of treat myself like the way I talk to myself is kind of like, I guess how, like when a toddler falls down and the parents are like, you're fine. Like they don't really react.
Yeah.
Versus like, they're like, oh my God, are you okay? They're like, you're fine.
And
get
then the
up.
Kid starts crying.
Yeah. Yeah. But if the parent doesn't really react, it's like, you're fine. Get up. You bumped your head. You're fine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I talk to myself. I'm like, oh my God, my legs. You're fine. You're fucking fine. You think you're gonna die because you went on a 6 mile run. You're in great shape. You're fucking fine. Relax. And mm-hmm. I go, oh okay, I'm fine. I'm good. So anyways, just some food for thought there. But yeah, so I was talking to my friend Jess, who lives in Australia, and she was living in Germany for 6 years, had 2 kids there, decided she misses her family and she wants to move back home.
Mm-hmm.
So she takes the whole family, husband, 2 kids. Moves.
Now she grew up in Australia?
She was born in South Africa. I think the family moved to New Zealand. She lived a few years in New Zealand, I think near Auckland. I could be wrong. And then they moved to Sydney when she was like 11 or 12.
Okay.
And then she lived the rest of her life there until she moved to Europe.
But Australia's kind of home, I guess.
Yes, yes. Australia is home for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah, she identifies with as being Australian and
okay.
Although, you know, South African ties, but you know, culturally and culturally she's Australian.
Okay.
Whatever. So she moves back there, and not only did she move back there, but she moved back there during fucking COVID. And we all remember how Australia was handling things. So she had to be in
very
quarantine
well.
Yeah, for 2 weeks with 2 very small kids. Mm. Like a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old
and
quarantine.
True quarantine.
Yes. You cannot leave the front door.
Yeah. Not like it's okay to go to the beach and.
No.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. Like, don't worry about wearing a mask because you're not leaving your fucking house.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what they do is when you arrive from the airport, and by the way, there was a time where it was like only Aussie citizens that were allowed to come back. Like, there's no tourism when she came back.
That's racist.
So she comes back, they being like the government, some mm-hmm. government official or whatever department, picks her up and they take her to like an undisclosed location to quarantine for 2 weeks. And they do that so that, like, you know, the parents don't know where the kids are, whatever, so that they could bring them food or, you know, whatever. They just don't want you to know where anybody is.
Yeah.
So they pick him up and take him to this place to quarantine for 2 fucking weeks. And it, like, it's a nightmare with 2 small kids. Kids want to go outside. Can't go outside. Like, mm-hmm. it's annoying. So she does that. She moves here. And then shortly after moving here is like, this was not the move. Literally not the move.
Oh, no.
And I was talking to her about that yesterday. I'm like,
And how long has she been there now?
Year and a half.
Okay.
Like, not long.
Okay.
Maybe a year.
But yeah, but I mean, that's a decent amount of time.
Yeah. And it was really interesting because I was like, dude, I remember when you said that all you wanted was to be close to your family and move home. And now you're moving fucking back to Cologne, which you cannot compare Cologne and Sydney in terms of.
Oh, so she is moving back
estate.
Then for sure.
Yeah, she has a flight
okay.
back. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So imagine going now. If you've never been to Sydney or seen pictures, it's beautiful. It's amazing. Fantastic weather. Beautiful beaches. Beautiful people. Just I think it's an excellent place to raise a family. Like a lot of recreational shit. Just fun. Versus Cologne, which is just like more dreary and it's wet and it gets cold and it snows and it's shitty and whatever. So she moves to Australia. So excited to be back. Realizes fuck, this was not the move. But she said she would have never come to that conclusion unless she moved there. Like, she had to go back.
Yeah.
To learn. But what she realized, which is sometimes a painful realization, is sometimes, you know, your blood, your family is not the best people to be around. And that, you know, sometimes it's friends or, you know, in her case, her husband's parents that she's actually closer to. And that they make more of an effort to come see her and are more involved in the children's lives than her own family. And she's like, I can't. We need to go back. Like, we need to go back where our community is. And our community was in Germany, was in Cologne. And we came back because we want to be with my family. But it turns out my family is really not that involved. They're not really that concerned with seeing us. And she also kind of talked a bit about her mom. And that was kind of like painful for her to come back. And her mom's, she's like, her mom is just never happy. Like, there's just a roadblock there for whatever reason that the mom is never happy. She's like, Anna, we were on the beach, like Bondi Beach. It's a beautiful, fucking gorgeous beach with gorgeous sand. I've been there many times, and it was a beautiful day. And she's there with me and her grandkids, and the whole family's there. And she's like, all she did was complain that it was a little windy. She's like, why is it always windy? It's a cold wind. It's a hot wind. It's, she's like, it's just always windy. Why is it always like, and she's just like, are you fucking, like, we're here, we're happy, right. We're healthy, it's a beautiful day outside, like, and you're worried about, like, a minor wind? Like, she realized, I think, in that moment that this woman can never be happy, and she just doesn't want to be around that kind of energy, which I understand. So, they missed their friends back home, and she said, you know, we had a whole community of people, and as parents, parents who are working full time who have two small children, she's like, there's virtually no time to try to make friends of your own. She's like, you're lucky if you make friends because your kid has a play date and you hang out with their parents just by virtue of your kids being friends. But she's like, listen, like, your kids might be friends, but you don't really like these people. Like, you don't want anything to do with them. You know, there's not necessarily like you have a lot in common. But she's like, we have this whole community of people up back home that help us, that, you know, it's more of a team effort in raising the family versus just her and her husband working full time, trying to take care of two small kids. So they're moving back to Cologne. And yeah, we got talking about a lot of things.
Now, are they moving back to the same exact place, or is it like just the same town?
I don't know if they're moving back to like the same house or apartment. I mean, they lived in Cologne when they had one kid. Then they moved to Dusseldorf, which is, I don't know how far away from that. And then they lived somewhere there. They didn't love it there, but now they want to move back to Cologne because that's where his family is.
Okay, I gotcha.
And apparently his parents are very, very helpful, like, a lot. So she, and my friend gives a lot of good insight into being a parent that I don't get from anybody else. Like, she's like, Anna, I don't want to be responsible 24 hours a day, 365 a year. She's like, I would just want to go get fucked up with my friends and not have to worry about it, but I cannot do it. I have to be responsible every minute of every day. And so she's, you know, I'm telling her about how I feel about having kids, kind of reiterating that. And she's like, I totally get it. She's like, I would have been fine without them. You know, that's something you don't really hear. You know, she's like, I love them, but like, I would have been fine, perfectly fine without them. You know, she didn't really have a pressing need to be a mother. I think she was telling me yesterday that, you know, her husband wanted him, but she felt it was more of like a biological urge where she didn't want to feel like she was missing out on something. So she had, you know, two kids, but she's like, it's fucking tough and it's not fun most of the time. It's like, all right, you know, fair enough. I appreciate the honesty. Mm-hmm. So, and we get right into it. We don't like, how are you? What's up with? I'm just like, what's going on with this? We start talking about, you know, we've talked about the disease. We'll talk about liberalism, wokeism, conservatives. Yeah, we talk about lots of things. So she, I think, is getting not obsessed with, but she always brings up Andrew Tate.
Okay.
I don't bring him up. I watch a lot of the guy's content, but, you know, I think I've mentioned him once to her, and she's like, I don't know who that is. And I'm like, check it out. Like, I wonder what you think about it. And she did, and then, like, the last three conversations we've had, he's gotten brought up a few times. And she's definitely not she considers herself to be, like, progressive, but she is also, like, is disgusted and frightened by the left wokest movement. She was telling me yesterday that she tried to get a present for her daughter. And her daughter likes playing with dolls, and she likes the family, the mommy, the daddy, the brother, the sister. And it also reflects her family, which, you know, they're a heterosexual couple with a, and she has a, and it's a boy and a girl. So,
as I'm willing to bet, the majority of couples are.
Yeah, and so my friend goes to the store to get like a holiday gift for her daughter a few weeks ago, and they only had gay couples.
What?
So she's like, what? So she goes up to like the front of the store. She's like, do you have any like couples with like a mom and a dad?
Do you have like regular dolls?
And they're like, oh no, those are all sold out. And she's just like, well, you know, do you really have to buy them in like equal quotas?
You know,
if 99% of couples are heterosexual and they want their kids to, and the daughters want to play with like a mommy and a daddy doll, do you really have to buy like, you know, 50% mm-hmm. heterosexual, 50% homosexual? So my friend who's very like liberal and progressive is like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, this is just how her family is. Why do we have to be, you know, shoving this down our kids' throats? So, you know, she'll say stuff like that to me, but then she also is very, you know, liberal and kind of free thinking in other ways, but mm-hmm. she doesn't like Andrew Tate and I do. So that's kind of, because usually we're like on the same page about everything. So when we find something,
doesn't like him.
No, but when we do find something that we're not on the same page on, it actually is like best case scenario for us, because we're like, oh, let's really unpack this. Which is, again, I don't have this relationship with hardly anybody where it's like, ooh, let's find like, ooh, this is good, because I respect the way her brain works and she respects the way mine works. So we're like, okay, well, maybe there's something that I'm missing. So she kind of pleads her case and I kind of, you know, was pleading mine, and she's just like, why is this guy, of everyone that we could like have our kids look up to, or anyone that could be popular and be a leader or a thought leader, like, why does it have to be this guy? And then I'm like, well, he didn't really sign up to be a role model. I'm like, that's really not, I mean, he's doing his thing and he's making money, and if people start assigning him like, wow, I want to be like him, that's really not, you know, he didn't sign up for title role model, just something that people kind of assign to anybody who's really popular. Like, what, like, why do you have to be a role model for kids? Like, he doesn't, who fucking cares? Like, I feel like that's a lot with like pop stars and singers and Taylor Swift, and, you know, well, she's a good role model, but Cardi B isn't for our kids. It's like, well, that's not their purpose to be, their purpose is to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why we think that, why do we need people that are celebrities to be like influencing and raising our children? It's like, yeah, they're going to influence your kids.
I've never understood that. I'm like, yeah, because you're a good singer, well, like, why should I also vote how you say to vote, because you can sing well?
It's because you have a brain that works and a lot of people don't. And so I'm like, if you're worried that some internet troll is going to shake the very foundation of like how your child thinks, then you're probably not doing a very good job as a parent instilling whatever sort of foundations you're trying to instill. So yeah, and if he's influencing young adult males, like, whatever, they're adults, they can be influenced by whoever they want. But if we're really worried about our children, then we should really be worried about the parents of those children and what they're doing and not doing mm-hmm. well. So, and I just kind of said, like, he's a provocateur. He's an entertainer. He's trying to make money and go viral. And it's, you know, if you want to be mad at anybody, be mad at society for putting him on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Like, don't be mad at him for doing his thing. But if he's doing something that's hidden for whatever reason. And I think Andrew Tate is just an interesting character beyond just, you know, things he's accomplished and the wealth he's accrued with his brother. Beyond that, it's just no one's really kind of risen to such, like, it's like beyond celebrity status so quickly.
Right.
Usually it's like a slow roll.
He came from nowhere.
Yeah, you're like, I didn't know who he was. And then it seemed like overnight he was literally fucking everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who is he? Like, he's not a singer. He's not an entertainer. He's like a business guy, but he has casinos, but he's American, but he's British, but he lives in Romania, but he has all these cars, and he has this brother, and he has like six girlfriends, but no kids. And so it was just like really kind of like, who is this kind of mysterious man, what is he trying to accomplish and what is he trying to do? So, and as you know, we obviously got on the topic because he was arrested in Romania on account of being accused of what? Human trafficking, I suppose.
Yeah, and was it sexual assault or something?
Yeah, sexual assault. And she's like, what do you think about that? And I go, well, first and foremost, we don't know. Like, we don't know shit. Mm-hmm. But if you were to be like, well, what do you think? Like, if you were to speculate, I'm like, I think this is a fucking, this is a, you know, like a mob job. Something's not adding up. Like, my spidey senses are telling me that they are after him. And she's like, well, who are they? And I go, I don't know who they are. But whoever's trying to shut him the fuck up, you know, who tried to shut him up when it came to social media,
mm-hmm.
and banning him off of, like, what, TikTok, Instagram, I think he still has Twitter, thanks to Elon. But everything else, I think he got kicked off on. And that just made him more popular because it made him more taboo, and people, you know, if you say you can't read that, like, then everybody wants to read it because they're like, well, what does it say? Why is it so dangerous?
Yeah, the best way to make a book popular is to ban it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So that's what they tried to do to Andrew Tate, and he just kind of became even more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started popping up on everybody else's podcasts or shows, Piers Morgan, Patrick Bit David. I don't know if that's when you talked to Dave Portnoy. I don't know. I would not be surprised if I saw him on Rogan within the next 2 months,
Has he not been on Rogan ever?
No.
Oh, okay.
But Rogan was talking about him a couple days ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he talks about him frequently, like, because he's, you know, Andrew Tate is part of the news.
He's in that same sphere of people as Rogan.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Yes. Yeah, like free thinkers, things like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if I saw him on Rogan, kind of not after this all gets cleared, but after. I don't even know if he's in jail. I haven't really looked into it. But yeah, my spidey sense is telling me that he probably didn't do what he was accused of, in my estimation.
Do we know any of the details on what he was actually accused of doing?
Human trafficking, like, I guess some girls wanted to leave and he forced them to stay. I don't know if it's strangling or something.
I heard there was something, I just remembered this. I guess some girls from, like, a different country came to see him and he, like, took their passports so they couldn't leave.
Yeah. I didn't hear that. I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not. That's what someone was saying. I don't remember.
So it's kind of hard to tell what's going on, but if I were to venture a guess, I think that they are trying to get him, and they are trying to get him on stuff that people on, like, boots on the ground are more upset with. So, like, the misogynistic stuff. Like, how can you, the this guy is saying these inflammatory things. It's like, okay, but number one, if you're an adult, and me as an adult, especially female, I hear these things, like I've never been like moved really emotionally by someone's inflammatory remarks by someone I don't know, that and something that's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
So like if someone that I knew like said something to hurt my feelings, like I would definitely get upset, especially if I like we were friends and or lovers or whatever the case may be, like that can hurt. But if someone I don't know is making comments about a group, a demographic that I happen to belong to, that would never move me to the point of like being actually angry. I'm like, I can disagree with him, be like, oh, that's funny, like, or he thinks women are property, like, whatever, okay, haha. But I would never be moved to like, we need to get him banned, or even make a comment on social media about like how I feel about it. I'm just like, whatever, let him say what he wants to say. If we're so worried that, you know, his words are so dangerous, we're actually, like you said, empowering him. And if we're afraid, you know, that he's going to influence adults, like, well, too bad. And adults have agency over what they decide to listen to and what they decide to do, but they should be able to listen to whatever they want. And if we're worried about him influencing our kids, then do better as a parent. Like, I don't know what to tell you. So I don't know. I like Andrew Tate because I think he's just kind of the equal and opposite reaction to the woke left, which has been moving very quickly in one direction. And I feel like this is just kind of like Newtonian physics, that someone's going to come along like Trump, like Andrew Tate, like, you know, I don't even want to throw Kanye West's name, but let's say pre-Jew ordeal into the
Kanye
mix.
Kanye and not Ye.
Yes, Kanye, but not Ye. That it's someone comes around and pulls you in the opposite direction. You know, that's kind of why Trump won. Round one, the only round that he won thus far. But, you know, people were just sick of being called racist. They were sick of the woke agenda. They were sick of the left's narrative. And he was able to incite a bunch of people to go, well, we are all against this, so we're going to vote for this guy. Because he's kind of talking some sense. You know, he's kind of saying, yeah, like, no affirmative action. You should work, and if, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are, you should get in. And people were like, you're racist. And he's like, no, I'm not. And, like, he was saying a lot of things that echoed just the ethos of kind of like what people were saying on the ground. Because Trump is not a conservative by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
He's just a populist.
Correct.
He kind of goes where the people are. If there was kind of like an under rumbling of disgruntled Democrats, he probably would have run as a Democrat and represented those people, because those people were in, like, they were incited and they were invigorated, mm-hmm. and they wanted a change, and they were going to move and go to the polls.
Well, people like forget that when he first said like, "Hey, I'm running," and started running, the GOP hated him. They all
laughed
did.
At him.
Yeah, not just laughed at him, but they hated him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to, oh, he's actually our candidate now.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, well, let's go ahead and get behind him. So it was all fake.
Yeah.
Like it all sides. Like,
yeah, it's politics.
You know, yeah.
But and it's funny you say that, because there's a distinct memory I have of like a panel on Fox. Maybe it was Fox. Maybe it was I can't remember if it was left or right. I think it was right. But I remember they asked Ann Coulter, like, who do you think is going to be the GOP candidate? And she was like, it's going to be Trump. And I remember them laughing at her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ann Coulter's like stone cold, like bitchy face. She's like, whatever, like, you'll see. And she was fucking right, like, by a large margin, that these people were just, most people, these, you know, a lot of blue collar people, a lot of Republicans, you could even say conservative men, whatever, just felt like, listen, we're tired of being shit on by virtue of,
yep,
things often we can't even control, like
just
our skin color or orientation, or things that we should be able to say freely, like, I think being gay is wrong, like, whatever. You should be able to say that. Like,
yeah, doesn't mean you're right. You should be able to say it.
You're not on the streets fucking killing gays, but you could be like, I don't agree with your lifestyle. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. Like, that's fine. I have no problem with anybody saying that. You know, I might ask them why, like, why are you mm-hmm. offended by where someone, one adult dick
What's
goes
your problem?
In another adult butthole? Like, I don't understand, but, you know, fuck, you should be allowed to feel that way, especially if you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
You're not hurting anybody. Get out of here. So, you know, that's why Trump became so popular. And I feel like Andrew Tate is kind of an extension of that as well, where it's like people were just, especially like lately, it's, by lately, I mean the last like 5 years, it really has been kind of like obscene how much hate and vitriol is sent into the direction of like the white heterosexual male. It's like, dude, like, really, you're going to blame this demographic of people when you yourself are like, well, not all black people are the same. Not all women are the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, to me, it was just so obvious that it's like you're being hypocritical. But, you know, a lot of people were like, well, you can't punch. What do they say? You can't punch up. It's like, well, then why are you saying that you're inferior to a white man?
Yeah.
Like, you're putting yourself down by being like, well, you can't punch up, you know, or you can't punch down.
Right.
Rather. That you're allowed to punch up. So then I'm like, well, why are you saying that you're inferior as a person of color? Like, that seems like you're putting yourself down.
Right. You're saying you're down and you're being the one punched down on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, in my estimation, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. So we were talking a little bit about that. We talked about, you know, kids and her urges to have kids. And she was kind of saying stuff that was a little bit different than what she used to say. So I was like, why did that change? But just a really insightful conversation. I mean, and I was like, man, I thought we were just talking for a few minutes. I look at my phone. It was like an hour and 47 minutes. I'm like, oh, my geez. God. So, which is pretty cool considering like the crazy time difference. And she was literally in the middle of work and
yeah,
and all that jazz. But, you know, I think she had mostly an issue with like, obviously, the misogynistic stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but he also says a lot of stuff about working hard and challenging yourself and sexual and gender differences and gender roles. And yeah, I don't know. And what's funny to me is like, I see a lot of women who are in the part of the red pill community, which I've been very involved in, like as an observer lately. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting because, again, it's the reaction to all the woke left stuff is this return to traditionalism, this return to traditional gender roles, sex roles, sex differences,
mm-hmm.
You know, dynamics between men and women in the home and out of the home, dating and all that sort of shit. A lot of these women who are like calling for more for women to be like more traditional, like are not traditional themselves. So it's kind of odd, you know,
right.
It's like you are the breadwinner, you're the one that's on TV that has the career. Like, I'm like, are you really subscribing to like you're a working woman? So it's just kind of interesting because they're calling for this like return to traditionalism, but they themselves are not in any stretch of the imagination like traditional themselves.
Yeah,
so like, what's the argument? But it could also be the case that you put on different hats. And that when you get in the home hat, you act like a more traditional woman.
I've seen that a lot, too, lately.
Of what?
Like, with the red pill, it's like, hey, they act one way, like, in public, but then they say, well, but, like, I'm subservient and at home.
Yeah, I'm submissive at home. And that was kind of something that, like, struck me when I started listening to more of the red pill stuff. You know, Rollo Tomasi stuff. Fresh and Fit stuff, a lot of the Valuetainment stuff with Patrick Bet-David. Yeah, yeah. They talk about it, you know, and they do it in different ways. Like, Patrick Bet-David is a lot more corporate about it versus if you go to Fresh and Fit, they just have, it's like these two guys and they have a bunch of, I've talked about it before. They bring a bunch of, like, strippers on the show and then they, like, drill them with questions and these women are borderline R, and they have like six words in their vocabulary, and so the guys win the arguments every time just because they can talk and the girls can't because they're stupid. And so then it makes the girls look dumb and it empowers the guys that are watching. They're like, yeah, fucking stick it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly do make good points about how women feel entitled. That's a big one, is that women feel like they're like, if you ask, like, there's lots of videos I watch where it's like a guy on the street stuff, man on the street stuff, and they ask women to like rate themselves and it's like 10 10 10 10 10 10
right,
and then they'll take a picture of that woman and then they'll ask a random guy on the street like, how would you rate this woman? Mm-hmm. And they're like 4.5,
right?
Like, you know, sort of a deal. So, it's kind of interesting, like, how we got to that place. And I'm sure people listening and who are, you know, in the dating sphere, and I was there for a long time, that's kind of, like, what I heard from a lot of guys, is that women feel like they're just the shit and they're owed the world. And a lot of the stats with online dating are really interesting, where you have, like, 5 or 10% of the guys getting 90% of the women.
Mm-hmm.
So 90% of the guys are, like, considered undateable by the majority of the women on these apps. I even saw a guy saying that, and he was a tall man, like your size, like 6'3 or 6'4.
Gross.
And he was saying that he got, I think they banned his account or something.
What?
Online, just because he was getting, like, too many matches.
What?
And I guess a lot of other guys, like, were getting zero, and they just said that he was, like, a bot or something, and they just, like, canceled.
That's weird, yeah.
his account. So it is kind of, like, this strange thing where, you know, a lot of these women are like, well, I want a guy who's making at least $100,000, and he's at least 6 feet tall, and he needs to have hair, and he needs to have this and that. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well, are you in the top 10% of women? Like,
right.
No.
Right.
You're a 4, and you think you're a 10, which is interesting, and you're 50 or 60 pounds overweight, and, you know, kind of like the Kevin Samuels shit. Like, mm-hmm. That's fun to watch when you see these entitled women just getting pummeled by guys, like, asking them these, you know, very brutal questions that they're forced to answer, and they can't answer them well. So I enjoy watching that sort of stuff, because I enjoy watching people, like, feel uncomfortable, and especially entitled women, you know. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's shocking that it's permeated to the point where, you know, the left is supposed to be the side of compassion and treating everybody equally, and, you know, it should be based on your character, not the color of your skin, like, all that shit. I mean, I've talked to, let's say, family members who maybe identify with that side, that ideology, and I asked them about their dating life, and a sense of entitlement that I was seriously shocked, you know, to the point where I was like, well, what would you do if a guy asked you to, like, split the bill or something? And, all right, it was my sister. She said that she, let's just be real. She told me this probably about a year ago, maybe more. I was asking her about dating. and I don't know. We started getting into it, and I was just like, well, what would you do if a guy, like, didn't pay or, like, asked you to split the bill? And she was like, oh, I would cause a scene. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, because I'm such, like, an observant person, like, I'm like, no, walk me through that. Like, what do you mean cause a scene? Like, would you say, like, would you tell him to fuck off? Would you get up and leave? Would you start yelling in public? Like, what constitutes a scene to you? And she's like, well, I would refuse to pay. I'm like, oh, okay. So you think a guy should pay? She's like, absolutely. Like, why then? Don't ask me out. Then da 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 da. All this sort of stuff. So I'm like, huh? Okay. Well, do you ask guys out? She's like, well, no, I don't. Most women don't ask guys out.
Right.
And I think she was, and a lot of women say this. They'll be like, well, whoever asked who out should be the one to pay. But most of the time, if not pretty much all the time, it's guys asking women out,
mm-hmm.
or girls out or whatever, because that's what's culturally acceptable. So then it's like this whole, like, guys should pay. And then my response to that has always been, well, what do you, you know, not to pull a Bill Clinton, but, like, well, what do you mean by should?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're talking about should in an ethical sense, like, what is the right thing to, what should you do as a parent in this situation ethically, or a businessman ethically, or what should you do in a football play? That's not an ethical question. That's more of a strategy question, right? Like, what should we do, coach? Like, no one's talking about ethics. We're talking about how do we win the game. So when people say, like, should a guy pay at least on the first date? I'd go, well, like, what do you mean by should? You mean ethically? No, there's no ethical component to who should pay, or morally. What about culturally? I would say, yeah, it's probably culturally more acceptable if a guy pays on a first date. But I think what we really need to look at is strategically, right? Like, this guy was calling for, you know, that guy should never pay on the first date. And I'm like, he's not helping guys. Because here's the thing. If you go out of your way to ask a woman out, take her out on a date, you take a shower, you get ready, you drive to the date, you know, you talk for 3 hours, and then at the very end, you don't seal the deal by paying, like, all of that could be in vain, because she may say, like, wow, this guy's not generous, he's stingy, he's cheap, you know, that sort of thing. And guys go, well, like, I don't owe you shit. Like, we're just getting to know each other. So I think that a good, sensible way to kind of navigate this, I would say, if I were talking to men right now and they're like, should a guy pay on the first date? I would say yes. Mm-hmm. Not because it's the right thing to do. Because people always say, well, it's the right thing to do. Fuck that shit. Do you want to win or do you want to lose?
Right.
And here's the thing. Just because you paid for something doesn't mean you're going to get sex. But you're definitely not hurting your chances by paying. You are certainly hurting your chances by not paying.
Yes.
So if you're trying to get the girl, like, or even just get an opportunity to see her again, I would suggest paying for the date.
Mm-hmm.
For your own sake, not for hers. But if you are trying to get laid, or you're trying to, you know, you may not get laid on the first date, second, maybe even the third, but maybe the fourth you do. Well, you wouldn't have never got to the fourth date if you didn't pay on the first.
Yeah.
So strategically wise, it's very wise to pay on the first date. Now, with that said, I also would suggest that you not do anything very extravagant on the first date, you know.
Of course.
Because, you know, you don't want to be fucking $300 in the hole because you went to, or $500 in the hole because you went to Burns on the first date, and then she just never answered your phone calls.
Well, and that also, you're setting the expectations super high.
Yeah. And honestly, she doesn't deserve that on the first date. Like,
no.
What has she done for you? You're just getting to know each other. So, I mean, I would always suggest coffee if you can do it during the day, even better, because then you can, you know, you have something you have to go to in the evening, you have to go home to whatever, like, you have work the next day.
I think coffee dates are good for females. They're horrible for men.
Why do you say that?
I mean, because the whole reason for going on a date is to possibly hook up.
Okay.
And coffee dates are not good for that.
Well, it depends on what your goals are. If you're looking to just hook up, I mean, I wouldn't suggest, if I was a guy, I wouldn't suggest going on a date ever. Like, talk to a girl on Tinder and be like, I'm going to be at the club if you want to have a few drinks, like, with me and my friends. Like, that's what I would say.
Okay.
But if you're looking for, like, an actual relationship with, like, a good girl or a good guy, like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with a coffee date. But I think what's probably a bit more romantic, maybe, is having, like, a glass of wine or a drink somewhere.
Okay.
At, like, a restaurant, or not a restaurant, but, like, make it a bar or, like, a nice place that you can have a drink at and not have dinner. Like, it's just a drink, so at most, you're, like, you know, $20 in the hole with this chick, which is, like, whatever.
Right.
It's not a crazy date.
No.
And I think that that's, I would suggest that date over everything else, is, like, hey, we want to meet for a drink at this place. Boom. Done. That's a bit more romantic than a coffee date, I think, just because, you know, you're going to see a lot of soccer moms and kids coming in, and it just doesn't really give you it doesn't really set the mood.
Correct.
So yeah, I think, like, an early evening meet me for a drink date is probably the best move, but never dinner. I did that once, and this was like 10 years ago when I was in Michigan, and it was bad.
An actual, like, dinner.
Yeah, a dinner date. There was, like, a lot of, like, hype, and it was like kind of a nice place, and you're dressed up, and you're just like, I was sweating, and then I was sitting on like vinyl seats, and so I was sweating profusely. I had to put like a cloth napkin under my legs, and it was just really, really bad. The guy was super awkward, and was like, the waitress came over, and he's like, can we get a drink? And I was like, oh my god, like,
for on first date?
Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. He was also the guy that told me he was a lawyer because he liked the clothes. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You said some.
Like, what? For the fashion? He's like, yeah. He's like, I love, like, to him, he was this little, like, nevishy Jewish guy. And he was like, oh, I just love waking up and, like, spinning my tie rack and seeing what tie I'm going to wear for the day. And I'm like.
That's weird.
Like, oh, he sounds like a girly guy. Like,
yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, you know, if you wear something very nice, like, you know, you feel more confident. But, like.
Yeah, but also he had no swag. So right. He's just like, I don't, you know. I like it because of the clothes. Like, oh man, you know. And here's the thing: like, I have pretty like regular, attractions. You know, like I like guys who are doctors and lawyers and shit like that too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm attracted to success. It's not like I would like really anything different. This guy was like cute and on the pictures and. You saw him in person, like, that was a little different than expected. Mm-hmm. Not even necessarily, like, height. It was just, like, presence.
Right.
And the voice was a big one. I tried to get him on the phone. He, like, did not want to talk to me on the phone before the date. And I'm like, yeah, well, you got to talk to me on the phone because I want to hear your voice. Like, I just want to get a better, want to make sure you're a real person. Like, it gives me more security. Yeah, this was in the first time I ever used Tinder. The first date I ever used on Tinder. And then, you know, he talked on the phone. I'm like, oh, I don't like this. But I'm like, fuck. We already invested, like, it was stupid. We invested, like, a month into talking. Because I didn't know how to, like, do it. So we're just, like, talking every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, we should probably meet. So we met, and it was just bad. And it like, he was that Jew. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, there is an element of, like, and he wasn't a religious guy. So, like, there's an element of, like, I get you, you get me. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a cultural thing. You know, our parents would probably be stoked about it. At this point, right. My dad, like, wasn't, like, a full-blown atheist. So, you know, there was still that. Mm-hmm. And even though my parents are, especially my dad, is an atheist, like, he still, like, has a strong connection to Israel. Like, he goes there every year.
Yeah.
He speaks Hebrew fluently.
And you did not that you have a strong connection with Israel, but like, you know, you're not religious, but like the faith still means like the traditions mean something to you.
Yeah. 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 Like I have a lot of like happy memories, like going to synagogue, not necessarily like in temple, but like Sunday school and like Hebrew school and like hanging with my friends and like going to Jew camp and like doing Jew stuff and Passover, Rosh Hashanah. Like I do have a lot of like happy memories from that. And it was fun. And, you know, now I go and I'm like, why does that shit even matter? And it's like, well, it matters to people who feel like they don't know where they belong, but I know where I belong.
Yeah.
Like, I know my community. So it's like, okay, well, I know where I'm from. So it's not like that's any mystery. But you talk to people who, you know, were adopted and they don't necessarily know, like, what their lineage is. And they feel like, or people who are mixed. I hear this from a lot of people where they're like, well, I'm not black enough to be black. I'm not white enough to be white. So, like, where do I belong?
Mm-hmm.
So I hear a lot of that, but like I'm fucking Jew on both sides, like full on Jew. I think both sides of the family, I found out with my mom, because my family is a bit more interested in the lineage of my family than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I thought it was like Lithuania, but it's actually, I think, Belarus.
Oh, you're Belarusian.
Both, yes, families, it seems like, originate from like the same area, and then some went to America, and some went to Argentina, some went to South Africa, some went to Canada, but it's all the same fucking people.
And that's on your mom's side?
I think that's on both sides.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like Belarus, Lithuania, like right, I forget what the city was, but she was like, yeah, we're all fucking from there. Hmm. I'm like, oh, interesting. So, so I know that, I'm like, all right, case closed, don't care, like, whatever,
yeah.
But I understand why it is important for people. So yeah, so back to this nebushy Jewish guy, like, looked great on paper, and he was like a big slinging D at like 25, which I thought was even cooler, because I'm like, dude, not only is like he's not like an older guy lawyer, like at the time I was like 24, 25, and he's 25, 26, and he's like had been with a firm for like a few years. I'm like, oh my God, you're 25 and like you know what you're doing? Like, that's crazy.
Right.
Yeah. But then when, but I don't care like how many credentials you have, you know, you come to the day and I'm like, and I was just like, okay. I'm like, dude, you know what he looked like? He just looked allergic.
He sounds like Urkel.
Yeah. He just looked, I'm like, do you have all the allergies? Like, and it's not like he was even sneezing or anything. He just looked allergic. I'm like, you look like you have a weak immune system. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he wasn't, you know, a lot of Jews are very funny. This one was not. This one was not funny. This one was almost too honest where he's like, I became a lawyer because I like the clothes. Like, you did it for the fashion? I'm like, I can't. I can't. I'll date the plumber. Like, I don't care. It's not okay. So, yeah. Not sure where, how we got there.
I don't know, but another horrible date idea is a movie.
Yeah, it's a bad one. Don't go, especially, yeah, first date. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You
want to talk.
You've left and you know nothing. You
right,
know?
Right.
Yeah, movie was good. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Do not go to a movie. I would not suggest having a meal. That's too much of an investment. So like all these guys that are like, well, I don't want to invest in this chick. She's probably fucking other guys. Maybe. Like, that's what I heard this guy yesterday talk. He's pretty eloquent, but he was like, well, why would I pay? I have to assume that she's having sex with other men. It's like, okay, well, why do you have to assume that? And mm-hmm. if you're assuming that about this woman, why are you going on a date with her to begin with if you're looking for a relationship?
Right.
It could be the case that she's seeing other guys or talking to other guys.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be the case that she's not doing that. So you can't really assume, you can't punish the girl before you even met her. Like, that's not okay.
Right.
So, but yeah, he's like, no, guys should never pay on the first date. It's like, that's not good advice. Like, it's not helping men get laid if that's your goal.
What does he think? You should split the bill?
I think so. Go Dutch on the deal.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what he was calling for, but he, again, was interviewing, like, these young, hot chicks who were super dumb. And, you know, he asked them questions like, do you think body count matters? And they're like, no, body count should never matter. What I did in my past is my past. Mm. Like, I don't care about your body count. And then he'll get like the one girl who's like, yeah, like the more traditional one, like, yeah, I don't wear makeup. And I think body count matters because it indicates that you're selective or you weren't selective. Or
does he ask guys the same question?
All the guys are pretty much on his side, but he kind of like.
I'm saying about body count. Like, what are they?
It's mostly just women. He is asking women questions on the panel. But he's pretty articulate. So, and what they purposely do is they bring people that are not. So then it just becomes like very apparent the discrepancy between, you know, it makes his arguments like foolproof because they're just like the talking phase, and then he like rattles on some coherent thought and everyone's like, wow, fucking killed it. It's like, well, if that's who you're asking,
exactly. You're
going to win every time. But I'll have to find it and show it to you. Maybe you've seen this guy before. But I like him. But I, you know, he's like, so you have to assume that he's talking. He's like, he'd ask a girl, be like, are you talking? How many guys are you talking to? And she'd be like, three or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, right. So when you take a girl out, you have to assume that she's talking to other guys. And therefore, she's having sex with other men. Like, he just has all these, like, conclusions.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, and maybe that is the case, but then, you know, at the end of the day, if you find out she's a fucking whore and you don't want to date her, then you've only lost like $20 versus like a $500 meal and then a $200 date and then a $100 movie take, you know, whatever. So I would say that, like, guys, you should pay for your own benefit. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very turned off by that, and I'm not a ritzy person.
Right.
But yeah, there's been situations in the past where I've offered and they accepted.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
And I'm just like, okay, I guess I'll take the penis and the testicles and stick them on me now.
Right.
Because I got the dick. Like, and women don't, like, we want to feel, if you're dating, like, a woman who is cisgendered, hate that I have to use that, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's going to want to feel like a woman. She's going to want to feel feminized.
Yep.
She may not act that way, and if that's the case, then she just basically kind of filling the void because you're not masculine enough. And
mm-hmm.
oftentimes, like, if you tell a woman, like, hey, like, get in your place, like, shut up or whatever, like, they will listen. And they'll be turned on and impressed by that.
Right.
But, yeah. But if you come across, like, initially, like, stingy or not generous, women are not attracted to that. Because the whole point of the whole traditional male-female roles is, like, the man is, like, the provider.
Yep.
And he's generous and he wants to take care of the woman. And the woman is, like, the nurturer and she provides the sex and takes care of the kids. Like, that's the
I've heard guys say before, oh, well, you know, it's expensive or, like, I can't afford it. You know, even a $30, $40 date, you know, well, one or two of those a week and it gets expensive. And it's like, well, either A, don't date, or B, go... get a better job or get another job to help out, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
sorry, but that's how it is.
Yeah. And
like you said, it's not, hey, let's go to Burns.
Yeah. You don't do that.
But like, you know, you need to be able to afford a $50 meal. I mean, like, come on.
I mean, at least in the early stages, here's
right.
the thing. If you don't have a lot of money, and you're like a young guy, a lot of chicks are okay if like you're kind of like if you're 21 and you're in college and you don't have a fucking job but you're about to go to med school. Girls are by and large, young girls are very cool with like, I get it.
Yeah.
You're going to be a doctor.
Right.
We get it. You're ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Like, we understand. When I was in college, it's like, yeah, we're all kids essentially. That, you know, we're working our way up. We're going to get a job. Now, if you're 35 and you can't afford the meal, then you're going to start repelling lots of chicks. But if you're a young guy, honestly, it doesn't really matter. They understand, be like, I don't have a job right now, but I'm in med school. Girls are like, oh, okay, cool. Like, let's just go for a walk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's if you can't afford it, like, go get another, like, if you're single and you're starting a date or you're dating or whatever, like, go get another job and build up a little bit of money so that you can go on some dates and, you know, $40 isn't going to kill you.
Yeah, it's not going to break
the bank. And I get it. Like, things suck. And, you know, you don't have to have the nicest car or, like, you know, a big house or whatever. But, like, you need to be able to pay for a meal.
Yeah.
And again, for the guy.
Yeah. For your own self and self-confidence and ability to just go and do kind of basic human things like go on dates.
Mm-hmm.
But and here's the truth. Like, listen, you may be able to pull girls with not a lot, you yourself not having a lot of money, but, like, you know, you're going to have to, it may not be a 6, 7, or 8. It may have to be a 3 or a 4. Like, you may have to bring it down because those women will accept more than someone who's a little bit, you know, hotter and more valuable on the sexual market. You know what I mean? You may have to just kind of, you can't get the Ferrari or the Benz or even the BMW. You mm-hmm. may have to get the Pinto. But it's still a car.
Yeah, it's a car.
It's still a car.
Yep.
So, you know, there's ways to work around it.
And there's a few places where, like, you don't need a car. You know, New York City and things like that. But, like, you know, on a whole, you need...
Oh, no, I meant it was more of just like a...
No, I know.
A euphemism for a woman.
Like,
at least you have a car. At least you have a chick.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely need to work on your personal wealth just for your own comfortability and also just your self-esteem, obviously. But, yeah, there's no reason why you need to break the bank. And if you're dating a girl who's asking and suggesting all these things and you can't afford it, like, that's just not the girl for you.
Exactly.
So, you know, if she's into fancy sort of shit and you're not a fancy kind of guy, then it was never going to work, you know, in the first place. Yeah. So it's
don't try to fake it because that won't work either.
No, you'll run out of all your money.
and then you'll really be poor.
Yeah, and then you'll actually, very much
be poor.
Then
you'll start doing stupid stuff, spending money you don't have.
Right, right. We don't want to be doing that. We don't want to be taking out loans or, you know, charging credit cards and charging them up to their max over and over again. That's probably not the move there. But I think it's the red pill movement is really interesting, and I like listening to mm-hmm. I like listening to the guys fire back at the girls because, yes, women were oppressed in the past and the you know, fucking got the right to vote and this and that. And that's just all sorts of. Okay. But now we're at a point where it really has reversed and the tables really have turned where, you know, you are given many advantages as a female, as, you know, not as a male. When it comes to education, when it comes
at least in
to
the modern
hiring.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
the
we're
third,
no,
in
I know.
The first world.
I know, but.
In America, obviously not in Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan, but we're talking about, let's just talk about America.
Sure.
You're given a lot of opportunities and that men just don't have. There's a lot less in terms of certain expectations, you know, maybe not so much in the looks department, but in terms of like financial success, you know, you look at the self-deletion rate among men versus women in the United States, it's like 5 to 1. Like, you know, 80% of the people killing themselves are men versus 20% are women. It's something crazy like that. You look at divorce rates, it's mostly women leaving the men. It's not like the men are abandoning the women, you know, as to why, you know, that's a different discussion, but you look at who has the worst jobs, whether it's like bricklaying or having to go to war, front lines, conscription, stuff like that. Women aren't drafted into the military, especially like not the front lines.
Right.
So who really is burdening a lot of the things that we have on our shoulders in society? And a lot of it is men.
Mm-hmm.
Construction workers, like a lot of the things that women just don't want to do. And there's really no call for equality in those positions. Like, no one's like, we need more female construction workers. Yeah, ditch diggers and roadside pickup trashers, like all that sort of stuff. We need more women garbage people. Like, no one is calling for that. It's all like, we need more women CEOs, we need more women in politics and power.
Which, by the way, most of the job you mentioned pay well.
I'm sure that they do, but they pay well because a lot of people don't want to do it.
I know.
So it's like, okay, now do you want to like start forcing women to do shit they don't want to do?
Yeah, drafting for jobs.
Right, yeah.
Job draft.
Yeah, they don't fucking want to go into the front lines combat. And to be frank, I don't think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
So... It's interesting when people call for equality, like pay attention to like, okay, well, what kind of equality are you talking about? Like you said, like ditch digging. Do you want to be a construction worker? Do you want to be a bricklayer? Do you want to go to war? Do you want to be, you know, doing snowplow shit when it's negative 10 degrees outside? Like what kind of equality are you fucking looking for?
Yeah. And by the way, if you do, great.
Yeah.
If you can do the job, I don't care what color you are, what you look like, what, sex you are, gender, I don't care. Mm-hmm. If you can do the job, do the job.
Right. Absolutely. So that is kind of, I guess, the end of our sermon today, I suppose, is just, you know, ask deeper questions, ask things that maybe on the surface a lot of people are missing. And a lot of those points that I just brought up was because I've been listening to, you know, a lot of Jordan Peterson. He brings up a lot of great points, and he does it in such a classy and Canadian and a non-threatening way. Like him and Andrew Tate say a lot of the same things, but and Jordan Peterson has even said this. He's like, a lot of the qualities that I have, the personality qualities that I have, he's like, are extremely feminine.
Yeah.
He said most men are interested in things where women are interested in people. He's like, I'm a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about, you know, his attachment style. Like, a lot of the things about him, he's like, are very feminine.
Yeah.
But he's still, like, talking about the fact that there's differences between men and women and that there's roles and dynamics. And it's just kind of funny because the guy who's calling for, you know, people to maybe be more open to going back to traditional roles is himself not a very macho man.
Right.
He's kind of not wimpy, but I feel like he could be brought down easily and has been by benzodiazepines and
well,
alcohol.
Who hasn't?
Right. I totally get it, Jordan. Yeah, I love Big Pharma too. But anywho.
Oh, guess what?
What?
Barb's like a few days away.
Barb is a few days away, which is crazy. Hold on. I'm going to move to the next track here because this one's about to end so I can get a little bit more of a little chat in. Farewell chat. But yes, Barp is only a few days away. next Thursday, get ready for the bisexual, biracial, quadriplegic orgy.
I love it every time I hear it. I'm so happy for Brandon too.
What makes me happy about this is that when people ask me, like, so what's going on with you? How's work going? I'm like, well, we have a big party.
Mm-hmm.
It kicks off with a bisexual, biracial, quadriplegic orgy.
How's
your job going?
Wait, what?
That's all I have to say. No further questions. That's it. Yeah. So the fact that that's like my fucking job, like that is in the sphere of my workplace is really cool. So we're all very excited.
He's driving down with his mom from Iowa.
And his mom said, you could do anything, just don't come on my bed. What a cool mom.
That is, yes.
Just don't chiz on my sheets, please.
Don't chiz on my sheets.
Just do whatever you can, have black testicles in your mouth. I don't care. Just don't fucking come on my sheets, please, God.
Oh, Jesus.
You can fuck my son, my quadriplegic son, in the butt. I don't care. Just don't come on my sheets, please. And that's fair. That's fucking fair. She wants a clean bed. So that is all we have for you today. Hope you enjoyed it.
We'll leave you with that.
And have a great weekend. And we'll see you on Monday.
Bye.
Goodbye.